Well, the Second World War intervened, and I suppose it was a major break in your career, really.
Absolutely.
Did you play much rugby during the war?
No, very little. I was called up to Penarth, and where I got sent to Weston-super-Mare. And the funny thing was that when we got off the platform at Weston-super-Mare, all we gang of Herks, about 200 to 300 of us, to be put into squads, it were. I was put in a squad, and who should be the flight sergeant in charge of the squad was W.H.T. Davis, Willie Davis, cousin of Hayden Tanner, one of the finest halfbacks that ever played for Wales, but again, not heard so much of because he went north at a very early age. They tried to sign Hayden Tanner, I'm told, and Willie Davis, W.H.T. as he was known, they tried to sign the pair to go north as youngsters, and Hayden wouldn't go, but Willie went. I knew Willie W.H.T. as a youngster. I was, what age then? 20, I suppose I was called up, 21 perhaps, to Western. He didn't know me from Adam. And about the second day on the sands, we had to play touch rugby. And he was going through everybody in the squad, of course, or anything about Rugger. And I touched him once or twice, and he didn't pass the ball. That was my excuse anyway. Mm-hmm. And he came through again, and I thought, you're not going to go through again. So I gave him a real Rugger tackle and hit him, and down he went into the sand. We both did. The ball went loose. He looked at me, daggers. And when we got up on the prom, on the front at Western, he dismissed the squad and he said, you, to me, come here. So I went over to him. He said, what's your name? I said, Hook Sergeant. You're not a relative of Bob Hook, are you? I said, yes, I'm his brother. Oh, he said, no wonder. He said, your brother's at Bridge North, isn't he, at the moment? I said, no, he's at Skegness. Oh, yes, he said, he left Bridge North. He's gone to Skegness doing what I'm doing. He said, please remember me too, and kindly, he said, because we did our training together. Yeah. I said, I will, sir. I said, excuse me, sir. Do you think you could get me some rations? I have an auntie who lives here in Weston, and I could be billeted out with her if you could get rations. I went to see, I'd only been there one night, and the place I was in, there were eight of us in a little room. Oh, it was appalling. Anyway, he said, yes, I can do that. Come with me now. So we went to the orderly room, and he went in and produced rations for a month. He said, your auntie, I assume, knows you're going to go there. I said, yes, I was round there last night, and she said it would be quite all right. My uncle had been chief of police at Gloucester, and he retired to Weston-super-Mare. So we duly started to walk together. A very strange story, this. And we walked and we walked. And we turned into Amberley Road at Weston-super-Mare. I remember it well. He said, does your auntie live in Amberley Road? I said, oh, yes. He said, I'm digged in Amberley Road too. So we walked on, and you can guess what happened. He walked into auntie's and saw it. He said, where are you going? I said, into my auntie. He said, but Mrs. Bent? I said, yes. He said, I'm billeted here. So my time at Weston-super-Mare, I can assure you, was very enjoyable.
Yeah. So where did your war service take you, Bill?
My war service, after not too long, took me to the headquarters, Cranwell, the home of the RAF, where it's a place where if it moves, you salute it. Doesn't matter what it is, if it moves, you salute it. I was there in appalling winter. But anyway, from there, I went overseas to Africa, ending up ultimately at Freetown, Sierra Leone. Then I moved on down after a few months to Takoradi on the Gold Coast. And I have a very interesting story to tell you that while there, I went to play at three gold mines against the miners for the station side, and on one I was stationed with the mine manager, who I hadn't been there the first afternoon we were there on the Proudie Expect before the Saturday. We used to play Saturdays and Sundays. It was against my principles to play on Sundays, but you either did that or you didn't. You couldn't play because you could only play for a couple of hours. It was so hot you couldn't start in 12 o'clock, so we never started till 2. and you played till five. And one day one side batted, and one day the other side batted, whoever won the toss. Anyway, I was staying with my manager this day, and he said, "Are you married, Bill?" He got to know my name after two or three hours. I said, "No, but I have a young lady I'm engaged to." He said, "Do you think she'll marry you when you get back?" I said, "Well, I hope so. I know there's a lot of Americans in England. I don't know whether she'll change her mind." He said, "Well, how would you like to go down the mine tomorrow and dig out your wedding ring?" I said, "Can you do that?" He said, "If that was the only gold I thought I was going to lose tomorrow, I'd be very pleased as a mine manager." I said, "Why is this then?" He said, "Well, they will swallow it. They will do anything, put it in their hair. And we have a line of cubicles for washing, which they have to, the natives have to go through before they can go home." And I said, "Thank you very much." So down the mine I went, and I was very frightened because it's a very deep, deep mine. I can assure you they're deeper than coal mines, I'm told. And if you saw the shaft I went down with, I can remember it to this day. It was a roped shaft, and two of the ropes were half worn through. And I thought, this is asking for death. But of course it was quite safe. He came down with me, and I suppose we were down there for perhaps the best part of an hour altogether, by the time we walked to where we had to, with a light on our hats. And I got him a drill in. That was taken up and filtered into a huge filter pan, and a little bit was scooped out. And a little native boy, he couldn't have been more than 17, something like that, with a bit of tin and some charcoal underneath, made the ring. I was very slow on the uptake here, because the first one he made was certainly as big as those curtain rings up there, much, in fact, larger. And I ought to have said, "Well, that's not large enough." But I told the truth and said, "I'm afraid that's miles too big. Will you make it for this finger?" Just taking it, and he did it again. They talk about it being a skilled trade. Well, I should think both rings he made in a quarter of an hour, both of them. And that's the ring that my wife's wearing today.
A lovely story.
Pure gold. When I had the shop, we had to, obviously like everybody has to, we had to get what bit of valuables of this world we have to a jeweller's to be valued. We went over to Truscott's. Mr. Preedy was owned Truscott's in those days in the alleyway leading to the cathedral. It's still there. And I know we went over there with a bit of jewellery and one or two things that we had. And he took this ring away and looked at it and came back and he said, "Joan, where did you get this from? In all my 40 years of being in the jewellery trade, I've never seen a pure gold ring before. Where did you get it from?" And Joan told him the story.
Yeah. And a valuable ring that was.
Yeah. Very cheap for me. I didn't have to buy one. That was very...
So where else did the war take you?
Well, I finished up there and I came back to England and landed at Gibraltar. We were about 3 days off Gib when over the convoy of the ship I was in came the fact that we landed in Europe for D-Day. So we all thought, well, that's it. We should be all going straight to Europe now. And we all felt very sad for 3 or 4 days because we were sure that was going to happen. We were stationed in Gib for about, 10 days, waiting for more boats to come up the Med to join a few boats that we were coming up the African coast. But they were true to their word, and they brought us back to England. By the time I landed and got settled down at a camp in England, of course, the war was beginning to come to a conclusion. And I got demobbed from England in 46, because I was one of the early ones to be called up. So, of course, I was one of the early ones to go out.